Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
And welcome back to the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett filling in for Sean Hannity today. I wrote a book called The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton. And one of the points I make in the book is it wasn't just the FBI and the Department of Justice that sought to frame Donald Trump for crimes he didn't commit, notably collusion, which isn't even a crime in the federal codes except in antitrust law. And it's no other tangential related crime such as conspiracy to defraud the government or honest services fraud or a violation of the Federal Campaign Election Act to have a meeting in the Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer who's allegedly going to give you information about Hillary Clinton and then ends up giving you nothing except a lecture on Russian adoptions. I lay all of this out in the book. I go through the statutes. I explain it. I disabuse the notion that the president has committed any crimes. But the media at every turn has convicted Donald Trump in the court of public opinion without a scintilla of evidence. None. There has been no shortage of media malpractice in the age of Trump, motivated by their own bias and personal animus toward Trump. Journalists have been absolutely relentless in their quest to prove the president's illegitimacy and to drive him from office. They have abandoned all objectivity. They suspended their sense of fairness. They allow their enmity to cloud their judgment. And in the process, the media, I believe, has squandered credibility. And by the way, credibility is the only currency that journalists have. It's no wonder that many Americans have little trust in journalists to be honest in their reporting. You want proof of that? How about the media immediately predicting that Donald Trump would be indicted and or impeached the day that Michael Cohen, his former personal attorney, former Trump Organization attorney, pled guilty to 8 different felony counts, the last 2 of which involved his President Trump's payment in exchange for a non-disclosure agreement to 2 women, which, by the way, are perfectly legal. As a lawyer back in the 1980s, I used to negotiate those constantly. They're a dime a dozen. They're as green as grass, and they're perfectly legal. And as the president said, the money came from him. It's not a crime to contribute to your own campaign. And frankly, it's outrageous that prosecutors in the Southern District of New York authorized a guilty plea to something that's not a crime. And of course, all of this was enabled by the Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton sycophant, Lanny Davis, who was one of the defense lawyers for Michael Cohen. 8 days ago, Lanny Davis was on CNN, and listen to what he had to say.
Brought me in to help him. It was about telling the truth and about telling the truth about Donald Trump. And you saw in court today, he not only implicated, he specifically under oath stated that Donald Trump directed him to commit a crime, making Donald Trump as much guilty of that felony as my client, Mr. Cohen.
Now, the pushback will be...
Now, that's just not true, what Lanny Davis said. And he's a lawyer, and he knows better. He went to Yale Law School, and his classmate and BFF was Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, Lanny Davis went on to represent Bill Clinton during his impeachment. Lanny Davis was also heading up a committee for the election of Hillary Clinton to the U.S. Senate, longtime ally and friends of the Clintons. So you have to look at the words of Lanny Davis through the prism of his own bias. And so when Lanny Davis says there's no question that President Trump committed a federal crime, that's just plain wrong. Let's get the thoughts of John Sale, who joins us now live on the Sean Hannity Show, former federal prosecutor in the Southern District and a Watergate assistant prosecutor. John, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. So you heard Lanny Davis say there's no question the president committed a federal crime because Michael Cohen pled guilty to a federal crime. Those are two different things, aren't they?
Well, of course they are. First of all, thank you for having me. Of course, they're two different things. And I agree with some of the things you've said. Some things I don't, but I think I agree with enough of them that we're going to be on the same page. First of all, one of the things that's been distorted, all Michael Cohen did in this guilty plea was make a statement or an accusation from him. And he has told more different stories that his credibility is worth absolutely nothing. And I have seen so-called legal experts saying that this makes the president an unindicted co-conspirator. And that is absolute nonsense. First of all, there's no conspiracy charged anywhere. And to refer back to Watergate, when President Nixon was deemed an unindicted co-conspirator, whether you agreed with that or not, that was voted by the grand jury. There's just absolutely no basis for it. And I think what Lanny Davis was doing, putting aside any political agenda, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt of trying to represent his client as best he could, but he was, I think he may have recognized, as the rest of us did, that his client had no credibility. So he went on television and was trying to offer up his so-called cooperation to the highest bidder, which might be the special counsel's office or the Southern District. And as far as we know, there are no takers because he's just not a viable witness. So
right. You know, and this is the same Lanny Davis who lied and admits that he lied. He was over and over again.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis, let's say, I don't want to adopt the word lie, but say he walked back a serious accusation.
Well, all right, you can say walk back. I'll use the term lie. And here's why. First of all, Lanny Davis said that his client, Michael Cohen, would be able to say and would say that Donald Trump knew in advance of the Trump Tower meeting with a Russia lawyer. And then Lanny Davis said he wasn't the source for that. Later admitted he was the source for it. So that's lie number one. And then lie number two is he now says that he was wrong, that his client didn't know that Donald Trump knew in advance of the Trump Tower meeting. Lanny Davis also said that the president knew about the hacking of the DNC emails and John Podesta's emails. Now he's walking that back. So, you know, I count three different lies from Lanny Davis. You can call it walking back, but, you know, I'll call it a lie. I feel safe going out on that very sturdy limb. So this is a guy, Michael Cohen, who has no credibility. And frankly, Lanny Davis has no credibility, John.
But Lanny Davis cannot be a witness. He has no testimonial information he could give, good, bad, or indifferent. Right. But I recall Lanny Davis in the very beginning going on television and saying that Mr. Cohen has information that'll be of interest to Mr. Mueller. That was the beginning of him trying to, as I said, interest the special counsel. And as far as anything we can tell, even the special counsel is not buying. So the harm was done. It's done in the media. It's done in the public perception. And it's grossly unfair to the president.
It is indeed. And let's talk a little bit about the law, because you're a, you know, former federal prosecutor, a very highly respected lawyer. I said at the beginning of this segment, it's not a crime to contribute to your own campaign. And, you know, the media, oh, he was benefiting his election. Well, of course he was. Every penny you spend as a candidate of your own money is to benefit your own election. And if that means to get somebody to sign a non-disclosure agreement to shut up and go away, that's perfectly acceptable. Trump can pay an unlimited amount of money on his own campaign. Now, I will say that if Cohen made a payment for Donald Trump with the intent of being reimbursed, that's a loan or an advance. At worst, John, that's a civil violation if it wasn't properly identified as such in financial disclosure forms. But that's the equivalent of a jaywalking $500 penalty, and it's a campaign, Donald Trump campaign violation, not a Donald Trump crime. Would you agree?
Well, I know that you have very good company in sharing that opinion. I know Alan Dershowitz has been saying the same thing you're saying. There are contrary arguments, but what I like to come back to is the real issue is whether or not it's a crime or it's not a crime. The president, the question becomes, did he have any knowledge? And if the president did not have knowledge, we don't even have to go to this discussion of whether or not it was a crime.
That's right.
There's no credible evidence that the president had knowledge other than Michael Cohen saying it.
Right. Well, and let me point out this. The vast majority of campaign violations are civil cases with civil penalties. It can only be a crime, and this is right out of the statute, if there's a showing that the person, quote, knowingly and willfully violated the campaign laws, end of quote. So in other words, you have to show specific intent.
Correct.
And knowledge that the law is being violated. And prosecutors can rarely show that. I mean, a lot of lawyers don't even understand the very complex campaign finance laws, which is why most cases are civil penalties. Right, John?
Well, I mean, that's why I said it's really more common sense. It's a matter of, is there credible evidence that the president knew and authorized any of these payments? And what evidence is there other than Michael Cohen? And that's why I said credible evidence.
Right.
And there is no credible evidence that we know of.
The other point is that, and this is the point made by the former chairman of the Federal Election Committee, who wrote a very thorough Wall Street Journal op-ed. His name is Bradley Smith, former FEC chairman. And he made this point. If the payments serve a dual purpose, it's not even considered to be a campaign expense. Not everything that benefits a candidate is a campaign expense. So if Donald Trump, for example, had other reasons for making the payment, let's say he had personal reasons. He's a married man. He doesn't want these allegations out there. You know, it might damage his marriage. He has, you know, a commercial purpose as well. He runs a multi-billion dollar real estate empire and a lot of other businesses associated with that. So if he is, wouldn't that be a secondary or dual purpose? And it's only a campaign expense if it's the primary, sole purpose.
Well, a prosecutor, as you well know, can come up with other crimes out of the same factual situation. Disguising the source of a payment, they can call it money laundering. That can be reimbursement. If Michael Cohen was, and I'm just answering this hypothetically, if Michael Cohen was reimbursed for more than the amount of money he laid out to cover his taxes, you could have a tax violation. But all of this becomes academic because it's a specific intent crime. And what Michael Cohen did, only the imagination can tell us. My position is, as far as anything I know has been in the public record, there's no evidence to implicate the president.
I was talking with a former federal prosecutor at the Department of Justice a few days ago, and he spent half of his career at the DOJ dealing with campaign finance laws and violations and so forth. And he laughed and he said, this is a guy, Michael Cohen, who pled guilty to a non-crime. He said, what is in counts 7 and 8 isn't even a crime. And he went further and he said, these prosecutors in the Southern District of New York don't even understand the fundamentals of campaign election law. So I'll leave our conversation with that. John Sale, former federal prosecutor in the New York Southern District, Watergate assistant prosecutor. Many thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to pause and take a quick break. I'd like to get to some of your phone calls on the other side. Our number is 800-941-7326. I want to talk on the other side of the break a bit more about what I write about in the book, that it wasn't just the FBI and the Department of Justice who were trying to frame Donald Trump, but the media was complicit in this. And I will cite you specific examples from my book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. Hope you'll buy it. Hope you'll read it. I think you'll learn a lot. It is available in bookstores nationwide, or you can get it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. I'm Greg Jarrett, filling in for Sean Hannity. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Sean Hannity Show. A quick segment here, but I do want to talk a little bit about the media. They accuse Trump of being Putin's puppet, a de facto agent of the Kremlin, a Manchurian candidate. I mean, these are just some of the examples I point out in the book. The Russia hoax, the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump. And who else was in on the hoax? A guy by the name of Bruce Orr at the Department of Justice, who testified this week on Tuesday. In just a moment, when we come back, we are going to talk to David Schoen about Bruce Orr. Stay with us. And welcome back to the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett, filling in for Sean Hannity. I'm author of the new book, The Russia Hoax, the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump. It has been the number one New York Times bestseller now for 3 weeks in a row. And one of the points I make in the book is it's not just the FBI and the DOJ that were trying to frame Donald Trump for crimes he didn't commit, but the media did it as well. And it's been going on for 20 long months, the period of time that the president has been in office. The media has proclaimed Trump and his associates guilty of criminal collusion. One anchor actually went to so far as to say, and this is a quote, and you'll find this in the book if you buy it and read it, quote, "They're confessing to colluding with the Russians," as if that's a crime. Another speculated that people will go to jail for the rest of their lives. Still another anchor insisted that, quote, "They're acting super guilty because they're guilty." But guilty of what exactly? You know, that vexing tidbit of information is always conveniently admitted by the media. The media has obsessed over collusion without ever really defining it. They assumed it was a crime that must be buried somewhere in the dusty law books. One anchor became so giddy over the prospect of Trump's arrest, she actually fantasized on air about the day that Donald Trump would barricade himself inside the White House as federal marshals banged on the door to take him into custody. The president's imminent demise has been daily fodder for 20 months, and yet the media pays almost no attention to the corruption at the FBI and the Department of Justice, and they largely ignored Bruce Orr this week, the Department of Justice official who was the conduit providing information from Christopher Steele and his phony dossier directly to the FBI, which used it to launch the Trump-Russia investigation and to wiretap a Trump associate. I want to talk about Bruce Orr now with David Schoen, one of the finest civil liberties attorneys I know, a veteran trial attorney. And David, always great to have you on. What do you make of Bruce Orr and his testimony? Yes, it was behind closed doors, but we have received information from those who were there. Mark Meadows, for example, said, "We learned that not only the FBI knew the dossier was unverified, they knew there were real credibility issues that the dossier would never end up in a court of law." What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, it's astonishing information. Frankly, I'm pretty shocked that Bruce Orr's lawyers allowed him to testify. Bruce Orr is just now beginning to be under the gun, thanks to the work you've done, the show has done, Sarah Carter has done, in bringing out the emails and Judicial Watch, the emails that concern Bruce Orr. It is unprecedented, in my experience at least, to have a higher up in the Justice Department acting, as you say, as a conduit for this discredited informant. But it, of course, with, as you well know, with Bruce Orr, it goes far beyond that. The connection with his wife that hasn't, we haven't even scratched the surface yet, her connection with GPS Fusion, and using Bruce Orr as a conduit, his connection with Glenn Simpson. There are so many facts still to come out. But I want to back up one second, make one point. You know, you mentioned your book, The Russia Hoax, before. I think what people need to know is the book is heavily footnoted. And that's what I want folks to focus on here all of this discussion, anti-Trump, pro-Trump, emotional issues, just deal with the facts. That's all you deal with in your book. Deal with the facts. There's a citation to every quote that you provide in there. Look it up for yourselves. People have to get on board with this issue. You mentioned before the media. This is one of the great tragedies going on now. It shouldn't be that only The Hannity Show, only Sarah Carter, only Greg Jarrett are exploring and developing these issues. Every media outlet ought to be vitally important because this all goes to the operation of our government and to the integrity of our government. It's shocking. What passes used to pass as news analysis is now called news in the New York Times and other other papers. I watched the CNN anchor the other day laughing as she announced that President Trump falsely claimed something. They're making decisions about facts rather than reporting the facts.
Yeah, they instead of dispensing information that is fair and unvarnished and neutral, the media became advocates. I'll give you one example, and this is also in the book. Jay Sekulow, who is one of Trump's lawyers, was interviewed by ABC's George Stephanopoulos, and the following exchange took place about a Trump advisor who had spoken to a Russian as if that, you know, is by itself criminal. So Sekulow says, but there's no crime of collusion. What is the violation of law here? And Stephanopoulos responds, collusion is cooperation. So in other words, David, viewers are left with the impression that the mere act of talking with somebody constituted collusion, which equals the commission of crime. But that's absolutely just not true.
And remember, many viewers want to believe it. There are many, you know, who in the last election exercised their vote for Hillary Clinton, adamantly supported her, and they want to believe it, looking for excuses for why the election was lost. They're anti-Trump. They hate Trump above all else. They want to believe these things, and the media is acting irresponsibly. But I have to say, it's not just the media. I think one of the most discouraging aspects of all this, and it comes to light with the Bruce Orr matter again, is the failure by the Democrats in this case to understand and make these important issues. You have Jerry Nadler and Elijah Cummings yesterday, for example, saying, oh, the Bruce Orr thing is just a distraction. These are people who, before President Trump came into office, were always speaking out against government abuses, abuses at the DOJ, overuse of power, excessive authority from the DOJ, that sort of thing. Now, it's absolutely not a factor. You had Peter Strzok, who by all measures crossed every red line at the FBI, never should have been permitted to remain an FBI agent, fortunately has not been permitted now. And I say that as a son of a former FBI agent. These folks lauded him, folks on the left in Congress lauded him as a hero, that he should win a medal for what he's put up with. This is unprecedented. Everyone, this shouldn't be a partisan issue. This should be a bipartisan inquiry. Everyone should now want to know what went on with Bruce Orr. What was the FISA court told and what was omitted from what they were told about the credibility of the source of information?
Yeah, and I mentioned this before in the last hour. Why aren't the FISA judges, you know, on the Fisk Court? There are 11 of them. They serve 7-year terms. They're appointed by the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, John Roberts. He's appointed all 11 that are currently sitting. They rotate on a weekly basis. They fly in to Washington and they handle all of the applications, which mount to, over the course of a year, thousands and thousands of them. Why aren't these FISA judges so irate that they are holding a hearing for James Comey, Andrew McCabe, and the others who signed off on these FISA warrants saying, account for yourselves here, because evidence has come to light that you misled us, that you may have committed a fraud on the court? Why isn't John Roberts, the Chief Justice, directing Judge Collier, who is the presiding judge of the FISA court, to hold a hearing? And if after that hearing, Judge Collier determines that there's evidence of criminality or a fraud on the court, perjury and obstruction of justice and abuse of power, refer the case to the Department of Justice for prosecution. Why isn't that happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the court should be enraged by what happened because it certainly has become politicized. And this is one of the greatest dangers we face because this is, of course, the most secretive court in the country. Everything is done ex parte there. These applications, meaning without any advocate from the other side present when these submissions are made by the Department of Justice. And that's why the FISA court has very stringent rules of procedure that require, absolutely require, the Justice Department to come forward with a supplemental submission when there's been any omission of a fact from their application for one of these very intrusive warrants. And it doesn't even require a material omission. Any omission. They want all of the facts to be called straight. They depend on that because there's really no other it's not an adversary system. So there's no one on the other side right. to call it for what it is.
And I would take it a step further. Roberts should direct Judge Rosemary Collery, the presiding judge of the FISC, to hold a hearing and to make sure that it is fair. She is empowered, it seems to me, and I want your opinion on this, to say, I am also going to appoint two lawyers to act in the interests of the aggrieved here, to represent not only the target of the FISA warrant, but the people, to make sure that this is not an ex-party procedure in which we will be fooled and lied to once again by the FBI and the Department of Justice. What do you think of that?
Yes, I think it's a good idea. She also could appoint someone in the nature of a special master to now investigate all of these applications and to get the facts and to act as the public's advocate. Because at the end of the day, all of this is about serving the public interest. It should be, at least. And it's a very dangerous procedure. Listen, she has a forum, by the way. There are petitions from the ACLU, Judicial Watch, other groups to get underlying documents here. So she has a forum to speak out about the importance of this. As you know, she responded to letters from members of Congress seeking all of these documents by telling them, you know, the Justice Department is fully able to turn all of these things over to you. Why don't you ask them for it first? So,
but the problem is that you've got Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein at the Department of Justice. I mean, Sessions is clueless and Rosenstein is covering up his own misbehavior and potential illegality because he signed off on the third renewal of the FISA right. warrant and apparently endorsing and vouching for the veracity of false documents.
Well, it was one of the terrible ironies of this whole special counsel appointment is, you know, it's triggered purportedly under the special counsel regulations by a conflict for the Department of Justice so that they can't proceed with the matter. And therefore, a special counsel like this Mueller is appointed. It's such a joke. First of all, you have many members from the Department of Justice, especially the Obama Justice Department, on Mueller's team, number one. But number two, since Sessions recused himself, Rod Rosenstein is heading the investigation. And as you pointed out, if there's any conflict in this case that's most apparent, it's that Rod Rosenstein signed the FISA applications, which are now at the heart of the issue. What was told to the FISA court? Was it honest? Was it complete? Was it accurate? Or was there important information omitted? Because as we all know, in any warrant application for a search or a seizure, the veracity of the source of information is the key. And that's why case law that's developed for, you know, tens of years now, it makes clear that you need specific facts about the veracity of the informant or the so-called reliable source, the confidential source of information, etc. That's missing here. It's not just that it's missing.
David Schoen, one of the brightest, most talented lawyers I know. And David, thank you so much for being with us today. Always appreciate it. When we come back, more from my book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump, available in bookstores. It's number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And your telephone calls. We have people standing by. I want to hear from you when we come back. I'm Greg Jarrett. This is The Sean Hannity Show. And welcome back to The Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett, filling in for Sean Hannity. I want to go right to the phones. April joins us from Texas. April, you and I have a connection. I was born in April. Of course, that was 1955. That's a whole nother story. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you for taking my call. And just a side note, I too was born in April.
But not 1955.
Oh, no. About 20 years later.
That's all right. What's your comment or question?
I am a little over halfway through your book, and I'm an avid reader. I read everything I can get my hands on. And I have to say that you did such a wonderful job writing this book that it's taken me a little more than 2 weeks to even get to the point that I'm at in it, because about every chapter and a half to two chapters, I have to put it down because I get so angry. I'm not a lawyer. My background is in medicine, but in my opinion, a first-year lawyer could take your book and make the biggest case in history against the FBI, the DOJ, Hillary Clinton, and the DNC. And it's appalling to me that this kind of thing could go on in our country. And
I'm with you. Nobody
cares.
I agree. It's outrageous. The sheer quantity of classified information, 110 documents on Clinton's unauthorized, unsecure server, is evidence not only of gross negligence under the felony statute. Her acts were intentional. She should have been criminally prosecuted, but Comey and his Confederates saw to it that she was cleared so that she could be president and not Donald Trump. It's in the book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. We'll be right back. And welcome, everybody, to the Sean Hannity Show. Sean has the day off. I'm Greg Jarrett at Fox News, filling in for Sean. For those of you who don't know me, I've been at Fox News for about 16 years, 15 of which I spent anchoring the news. And currently, I'm a Fox News legal analyst by virtue of the fact that everybody sins. I used to be a lawyer. Actually, I'm still a lawyer. But I was a trial lawyer back in the 1980s, a defense attorney. And so these days, and a lot on Sean's radio show and television show, I focus on the law. I recently published a book entitled The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. It has seemed to have struck a chord with Americans because for 3 weeks in a row, it has been the number one bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. And I'm very proud of the book because I think it is the only book out there that tells the truth about what really happened. That there was a scheme by Department of Justice officials and the FBI, James Comey and his Confederates, to unduly influence the 2016 presidential election, to clear the path for Hillary Clinton and to frame Donald Trump for things he didn't do. Here's how it worked. Hillary Clinton clearly violated the Espionage Act through the use of her private email system. On it, there were 110 documents that were classified, meaning they were classified when they were sent or received by Hillary Clinton. That is not only gross negligence under the Espionage Act, that is intentional. She should have been indicted on 110 criminal felony charges, but she wasn't. James Comey actually found that Hillary Clinton broke the law. He wrote it down not once, but twice on a statement that he composed May 2nd of 2016, but he wanted to clear her anyway. So we had his Confederates, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, sit down at Strzok's computer on June 6, 2016, and they sanitized Comey's findings of fact, and then Comey contorted the law when he stood in front of television cameras on July 5th, 2016, and he cleared Hillary Clinton in an all-time remarkable legal somersault. He laid out a meticulous case of how she broke the law, and then all of a sudden, he did an about-face, and he said, but no reasonable prosecutor would ever bring such a case. Now, Comey must think Americans are stupid, and he's the only smart man in the country. Months earlier, he had prosecuted a Navy seaman for doing just a fraction of what Hillary Clinton had done. So James Comey and the Department of Justice had already prosecuted Brian Nishimura, was his name. And don't forget, they had prosecuted for doing the same thing other individuals, Harold T. Martin, David Petraeus, Sandy Berger. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's all in my book, The Russia Hoax, and I lay it out. And I also lay out something that nobody in America really knew, that on that day when Comey cleared Hillary Clinton, his FBI was over in London meeting secretly with the author of a completely fictitious document called The Dossier that was funded by Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee. And armed with that dossier, it was an aha moment for the feds. James Comey knew that it was a phony document, but he didn't care. He was going to exploit it, use it as a pretext to damage Trump's candidacy, to prevent him from being elected, to clear the path for Hillary Clinton. It didn't work. So Comey and his Confederates then double down to try to undo the election results, to subvert the rule of law and undermine democracy in America. And when Comey got fired for his machinations in the Hillary Clinton case, he kept at it. It's unbelievable. The guy is tenaciously corrupt. He will persevere in his corruption beyond any human bounds. So he leaks presidential memos that he stole from the government. There's no other way to put it. It was theft. Those aren't his memos. He wrote those memos as FBI director, and in the course and scope of his employment, that makes it government records, the people's records, not James Comey's. But he spirited those documents out of the J. Edgar Hoover building, kept them at home, and then he leaked it to his pal, who leaked it to the New York Times. And Comey admitted he did it solely for the purpose of triggering a special counsel to continue to pursue the investigation, the fraudulent investigation of Donald Trump. And guess who was the special counsel selected? James Comey's longtime partner, ally, and friend, best buds, BFF, Robert Mueller. These two guys were thick as thieves. They go back a couple of decades. These two guys together screwed up one of the biggest cases in America, the anthrax murder case. Remember that? That shut down Washington for the better part of a week. People died. And James Comey and Robert Mueller accused an innocent man by the name of Stephen Hatfill. And they ruined Hatfill's life. And later on it came out that Stephen Hatfill was completely innocent. It was somebody else. And that cost you, the American taxpayer, roughly $6 million of your hard-earned money, because James Comey and Robert Mueller bungled their case in their supreme arrogance. And they didn't have the common decency and the courage to say, we got it wrong, we're sorry, we apologize. Doesn't that speak volumes about these two guys, James Comey and Robert Mueller? It's all in the book, The Russia Hoax. I spend an entire chapter talking about James Comey and Robert Mueller and what they did together, their actions and inactions. Mueller should never have accepted the job as the special counsel. His multiple conflicts of interest are disqualifying. It's mandatory, not voluntary. And yet Mueller ignored the law with impunity. Rod Rosenstein, hey, he's on it. In on it, too. These guys, Rosenstein, Mueller, Comey, they're the Mo, Larry, and Curly of law enforcement. Rosenstein should have disqualified himself at the outset, Since he's a key witness, he wrote the memo recommending the firing of James Comey. And yet Rosenstein refuses to recuse himself. So the fix is in, ladies and gentlemen. It always has been. But if you want the truth, buy and read The Russia Hoax, the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump. And this week we have learned that the FBI's corruption and the DOJ's corruption was worse than we thought. James Comey and his confederates, we learned on Tuesday of this week, knew that the dossier was false. They knew there wasn't a shred of credibility to its author, Christopher Steele. The FBI never verified it. Nothing was corroborated or substantiated. And now on Tuesday of this week, we learned Bruce Ohr, the number four official at the Department of Justice, confirmed that the FBI knew that Christopher Steele was virulently anti-Trump and biased, and yet the FBI didn't care. They still used Christopher Steele and his dossier as the basis for launching the Trump-Russia investigation and to deceive a FISA court to wiretap a Trump associate by the name of Carter Page. All of these guys should be prosecuted for perjury, obstruction of justice, abuse of power. And who were they? Who were the people that signed off on these FISA warrants, deceiving the judges, concealing evidence, and lying, perpetrating a fraud? I'll give you their names. James Comey, then FBI director. His number two, Andrew McCabe, he signed off on it. At the Department of Justice, the Deputy Attorney General, Sally Yates, she was in on it. She signed it. And guess who? Rod Rosenstein signed the third renewal. Without a scintilla of evidence, nothing verified, nothing corroborated, no new evidence, and Rosenstein signed off on it. No wonder he has spent the better part of the last year obstructing Congress, obstructing justice, and refusing to turn over documents under a lawful subpoena. All of these people I identify in the book, The Russia Hoax, as profoundly corrupt. Not just your average run-of-the-mill, everyday corrupt individuals. No. These people have set an all-new, incredible standard for governmental corruption. Why aren't the FISA judges so irate that they're holding James Comey and McCabe and all the others in criminal contempt? Why isn't the Department of Justice taking swift action to present the evidence to a grand jury for indictments? We trusted these people to uphold and enforce the law, and they were breaking the law. They were committing crimes with impunity. They went after Trump without probable cause and based on fabricated phony evidence from a completely discredited source, Christopher Steele, who was biased and lied. He was fired for lying. And what about Bruce Ohr? Well, Ohr concealed from his superiors at the Department of Justice that he was acting as a conduit between Steele and the FBI, and Ohr filed false documents omitting his wife's role in creating the phony dossier. Nellie Ohr was being paid by the Hillary Clinton campaign to help compose the phony dossier. So Bruce Ohr and Nellie Ohr's joint bank account was being enriched by Hillary Clinton. That is a crime. It is a crime to use your public office to profit financially, personally. It's a felony. You want to know what felonies? Bribery statute. The honest services fraud statute. The gratuity statute. The list goes on and on. We're going to talk a bit more about it in just a moment. We're going to pause and take a quick break, but it's all in the book, The Russia Hoax, the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump. You can get it in bookstores nationwide. Go to Amazon or barnesandnoble.com and you can order it there. I'm Greg Jarrett. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett at Fox News, filling in for Sean Hannity, who richly deserves some time off, hardest working man in news. I wrote a book called The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. I lay out, I think meticulously, sourced with more than 700 footnotes, all of the corrupt actions of people like James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, Bruce Ohr. And what's amazing is that Bruce Ohr is still employed at the Department of Justice. He testified on Tuesday behind closed doors, but we know what he said. He implicated the FBI and himself, essentially. It's outrageous that Ohr is still an employee. Instead of prosecuting people for breaking the law, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, appears to be protecting them. Why hasn't he presented this evidence to a grand jury? And even worse, Sessions himself, like Rosenstein, has been actively obstructing Congress, refusing to produce documents in response to lawful subpoenas. This is a cover-up, ladies and gentlemen. They're covering up their corruption and probable crimes. Jeff Sessions should resign or be fired for either incompetence or malfeasance. It's in The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. You can buy it online or in bookstores. Your calls on the other side. Give us a call, 800-941-7326. This is The Sean Hannity Show. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett of Fox News, filling in for Sean Hannity. You might call me the poor man's Sean Hannity. I try. I'm trying. And I tried really hard by writing a book called The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. If you want to know what really happened, how officers of the government abused their positions of power to try to throw an election, it wasn't the Russians. It was James Comey and Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Ohr, and a whole bunch of others. And it's in the book, and I hope you'll read it. My Twitter handle is at Greg Jarrett, but Greg is spelled technically with three G's, G-R-E-G-G-J-A-R-R-E-T-T. That's my Twitter handle. Check it out. I wrote a column this week also on the Russia hoax and focused primarily on Bruce and Nellie Ohr, and we'll talk a bit more about them. But I do want to get to some of your phone calls. Give us a call at 800-941-7326. The number is 800-941-SEAN. Let's go right to the phones. Kurt joins us from Utah. Kurt, welcome to the program.
Greg, it is an honor and a privilege to be talking to you today, sir.
Thank you.
And I'd like to start by saying your book was the greatest one I've ever listened to. Amazing.
Ah, you got it on audio tape, huh?
Yeah, I drive trucks, so that's how I do all my books.
Well, thank you for listening to the book, and I appreciate that. So what did you learn out of it, Kurt?
Oh, just how deep it goes. But I want to add a little bit to this, to where I have a theory. So if you bear with me just a moment.
Sure.
I believe that Hillary Clinton is the key to all of this. Because none of this really started until Donald Trump said in his campaign that he wanted to drain the swamp. And then, you know, during one of the debates says, yeah, I'm going to put you in jail or you'll be in jail. And before this happened, I believe Hillary Clinton said publicly that if she goes down, she's taking everybody down with her.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, here's what happened. Donald Trump, as you point out, Kurt, vowed to drain the swamp. Well, the swamp in Washington didn't want to be drained. So he was a direct threat to their power. And so they were going to see to it by abusing their positions of power and their full-blown arrogance to make sure that Hillary Clinton was anointed president and that Donald Trump was defeated. And the first thing they had to do was declare her of the 110 felony crimes she committed. And so they twisted the facts, they contorted the law, and they cleared her. I have yet to find a prosecutor who wouldn't have loved to have brought that case against Hillary Clinton. So, Kurt, thanks for listening to the book, buying the book. I appreciate it. Let's go to Dan in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mr. Jarrett, and congratulations on your book.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for educating us. I yet to get it, so I don't want to act like I have it yet, but I'm definitely going to order it. But I'll get quick to the point. I'm noticing a lack of endorsement from former President Obama, from Hillary Clinton, with any of these primaries. Am I missing it, or is there like a trend going on here where they're staying pretty low key?
Yeah, I think there is a reason why they're low key, because they don't want to draw attention to themselves. The more they do that, the more apt people are to say, wait a minute, you're corrupt. You engaged in crimes, Hillary Clinton. And so I think she feels like she's got one foot dangling over the precipice of criminality. And all it would take is to remove Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein from office. And you know what? I guarantee you that Jeff Sessions will not be the attorney general more than a week after the midterm elections. Sessions submitted in May of last year a letter of resignation to Donald Trump. And Trump at the time felt it was politically unwise to accept it. I bet that letter of resignation, which has no time limit on it, is sitting in the top drawer of the desk in the Oval Office. And Donald Trump, I predict, will pull that letter of resignation out and formally accept it after the midterm elections. It can be accepted at any time at the president's pleasure. But don't stop with Sessions, Mr. President. Remove Rod Rosenstein. Why? The basis is clear and easy. He's been obstructing justice. He's been refusing to hand over documents, even though the president ordered the Department of Justice to comply with all requests from Congress. And so Rod Rosenstein has committed repeated acts of insubordination. He is refusing to comply with the orders and directives of the chief executive, Donald Trump. On that basis, Rod Rosenstein should be canned. So expect Jeff Sessions to be standing outside the Department of Justice with a box of his office tchotchkes. And I bet that it doesn't include the scales of justice, because Jeff Sessions wouldn't know justice if you threw the scales in his face. That's how much I think of Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is more than feckless. He's incompetent. He's engaged in repeated acts of malfeasance and misfeasance. He is in way over his head. He had no business being the attorney general. And President Trump was right when he said more than a year ago that choosing Jeff Sessions as attorney general was one of the worst decisions he ever made. I mean, Sessions is the guy who betrayed the president before he was even sworn in. Remember Sessions' congressional testimony? He said, quote, "I basically recused myself from the first day." Sessions testified he put in motion his recusal from anything related to Russia on the very first day he took office. So think about it. The night before, Jeff Sessions is in the Oval Office being sworn in as the new attorney general, standing next to him as the president of the United States who appointed him. And Sessions had concealed his intentions from the president. That is rank, profound betrayal. It is a breach of trust. You know, and when you have lost the trust and confidence of the President of the United States, it's time to resign. Take the hint, Jeffrey. Resign. Quit. The president doesn't like you. He doesn't like the job you're doing. You're not competent. Leave the Department of Justice. Let's go to our next caller. And Dan, by the way, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Ken, who's in North Carolina. Ken, both my daughters went to college in North Carolina. We love the state. I lived there for a year myself, one of the prettiest places I ever lived. So, Ken, welcome to the program.
I absolutely love you. I appreciate you, Greg. I had a quick point that I think that I haven't really heard anybody talk about. The fact that they will never indict Hillary Clinton is because I believe that Obama's fingerprints are all over everything that went on. He knew everything, and if they did, they would have to indict him. And could you imagine the political poison would be on the person that went after him for indicting the first African-American president? That's why I don't believe that they'll ever indict her.
Well, you know, you're right, Ken, because as I outline in the book, the Russia hoax, the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump, Obama's fingerprints were all over this. I mean, you see this in the emails and text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, in which at one point in time, a text message is sent, the White House wants to know everything we're doing. Well, that's Obama. Of course, Obama not only knew about the frame job on Donald Trump, but he was the guy who instructed James Comey to clear Hillary Clinton. How do I know that? About 6 weeks before Comey wrote his infamous exoneration letter or statement of Hillary Clinton, clearing her of her obvious crimes, Barack Obama went on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace and he said, oh, she didn't intend to jeopardize national security. She was merely careless. And guess what? When they expunged the words gross negligence from Comey's statement to clear Clinton, they substituted the words extremely careless. Where did they get that? They got it from Barack Obama. He engineered the exoneration of Hillary Clinton. And then he was kept abreast of all developments in the investigation without evidence, without probable cause, of Donald Trump. So I think you're right, Ken, that Barack Obama's fingerprints are all over this. And he was also communicating with Hillary Clinton on her private, unauthorized email system in violation of the law by sending her emails using a pseudonym. And it's worse than that. He was sending her emails on a mobile device while she is abroad. If you don't think for one moment that the Russians and the Chinese and, you know, all other kinds of people who have hacking abilities didn't have every single one of the 110 classified documents on Hillary Clinton's email system and her communications from Barack Obama using a pseudonym, then, you know, you're smoking something. Trust me, the Chinese have it, the Russians have it, and about 20 guys in their basement have a copy of all of her classified documents. So thanks for your phone call. Let's go to Terry in South Carolina. Hey, Terry, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Greg, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate everything you guys do and how you keep the truth coming out. Basically, I'll keep it short and quick that Jeff Sessions, when are we going to start calling him part of the deep state? Basically, this guy has done nothing to help Trump to lift this fog from the background. I don't understand why we're putting up with this. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, I agree 100%. I've said it before, you know, that Jeff Sessions is the attorney general in name only. You know, it may say attorney general on the door of his executive office suite at the Department of Justice, but he, you know, he's nowhere to be found. He's in some back room playing with his Legos. This guy is, you know, it's easy to be a United States senator. I write about this in the book, The Russia Hoax. You know, senators don't really do much. You're one of 100 people in the Senate chamber. And, you know, if you pass one or two pieces of meaningful legislation a year, you know, it's, wow, I had a really tough year. I worked really hard this year. I accomplished more in an hour than those guys accomplish in a year. It's the do-nothing Congress and Senate. And so, as I say, it's easy to be a U.S. senator. It's actually hard to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, called the Attorney General of the United States. And, you know, Donald Trump will be the first one to tell you that, look, he appointed Jeff Sessions for two reasons. One, Sessions was the first senator to endorse Trump. So the Trump, campaign was filled with gratitude. They appreciated it. It was helpful. But the second is, and Trump will tell you this, that Sessions was begging for the job. I mean, I'm not sure he was on his hands and knees, but I mean, he was doing some pretty serious begging. He'd make a panhandler jealous. So that's the reason Donald Trump appointed Jeff Sessions. And maybe the president didn't fully appreciate that, you know, you've got to have an experienced, intelligent, competent person to be the Attorney General of the United States. And instead, he ends up with Jeff Sessions, who is the antithesis of all of that. We're going to pause, take a break. We're talking about my book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. Bookstores nationwide, or order it on BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. Your phone calls on the other side of the break. Our number is 800-941-7326, 800-941-SEAN. I'm Greg Jarrett. This is The Sean Hannity Show. Back to The Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett, filling in for Sean Hannity. My new book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump, has been number one on the New York Times bestseller for the last 3 weeks. And one of the chapters I spend really is on Jeff Sessions, who I describe as probably the most feckless, if not incompetent, attorney general in modern American history. Is it any wonder that President Trump continues to express his impatience, his disgust, his frustration with Sessions, who has failed to take aggressive action against all of those who appear to have broken the law with impunity? He ignored pleas from members of Congress to reopen the Hillary Clinton email case, including her destruction of documents under congressional subpoena. There is no investigation of Clinton's payments to a foreigner who is using Russian sources for the anti-Trump dossier. The actions of James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, and all of the others should have been presented to a grand jury. Abuse of FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, to gain wiretap warrants. That should have been investigated and pursued by Sessions. And instead of doing these things, Jeff Sessions has spent months obstructing Congress, refusing to produce documents in response to lawful subpoenas. So quite frankly, Jeff Sessions' only real achievement as Attorney General has been to alienate his boss by his actions and, most notably, his inactions. As I write in the book, The Russia Hoax, President Trump was correct when he said that choosing Jeff Sessions as Attorney General was one of the worst decisions he made. Jeff Sessions should take the hint. I mean, when you have lost the confidence and trust of the president, it's time to resign. In the alternative, the president should finally accept the letter of resignation that was submitted by Sessions last May. There's no time limit on the letter. It can be accepted at any moment at the president's pleasure. Joining me now to talk about it is a terrific attorney, one of the best in the nation, Joe DeGeneva. He's a partner at the firm of DeGeneva and Tensing. And Joe is a former U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia. He served as an independent counsel. And yes, he's quoted in my book, The Russia Hoax. Why? Because he's an outstanding lawyer, and he gets it. He understands this. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Oh, delighted to be with you, Greg. And congratulations on your book being number one for the third week in a row. Richly deserved tribute.
Thanks very much. Let's talk for just a moment about Jeff Sessions. What do you think of Sessions as Attorney General?
Well, I think Jeff is a good man in the wrong job. He clearly has no command presence. He has eliminated himself from the central issue of this presidency. He has, by virtue of his recusing himself, which he didn't have to do in a counterintelligence investigation. This was not a criminal investigation. When it started. One of the things that's very disappointing about him is that he had no plan for becoming attorney general. He had no people to bring in with him. He had never met Rod Rosenstein until shortly before Rod was nominated by the president. Another terrible, terrible mistake. Of course, Rosenstein has been the central figure in the outrageous decision to appoint a special counsel. But Sessions should never have accepted the job of attorney general. When you watch him function, you are watching basically an inanimate object. He's completely clueless. He doesn't know how to respond to things. His public speaking leaves so much to be desired. But again, his major failing was accepting the job, and then once accepting it, hiding from all the important decisions. It's really quite remarkable that the people in the Obama administration, in the FBI and the Department of Justice, have gotten away with perhaps one of the greatest crimes in the history of our country.
What's also amazing to me, and I write about this extensively in the book, is that Jeff Sessions should never have recused himself. He cited a regulation that requires recusal in a criminal case, but at the time of his recusal, it was not a criminal case. It was a counterintelligence probe. It should have continued to have been handled by the FBI and the Department of Justice. And that is what angered President Trump, that this is a guy who intended all along to recuse himself. He admitted it in his testimony before Congress. And he betrayed the president by failing to tell the truth, to tell the president that he was going to recuse himself. But for that recusal, there would never have been a special counsel appointed.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that is a failing of his. Mm-hmm. I was in Montgomery, Alabama last week giving a speech to a very large group of civic, business, and government leaders. And when I finished my remarks, I took extensive questions from the floor, and almost every single question dealt with Jeff Sessions and why in the world is functioning the way he is. And they were extremely disappointed, and this is his home state, and it was a friendly crowd. I think your book actually does a phenomenal job of outlining the bad decisions that Sessions made all along the way. And it was quite obvious that he was, with no one around him from his group of people that he might have chosen to support him and assist him in being in his first days as attorney general, he was left to the tender mercies of the career people in the department who were not Trumpers by any stretch of the imagination, and certainly Rod Rosenstein, who was, if anything, a never-Trumper. Really a complete failure of a cabinet position in the single most important area for this president. Truly a tragedy.
You know, Joe, I'm asked all the time, because I'm so critical of Jeff Sessions, and mm-hmm. have demanded on more than one occasion that he walk away from this and resign. But
people
say to me, so who should be the attorney general? And I always say it should be somebody like Joe DiGenova, which invites the question, Joe, why not you? So if you were asked to replace Jeff Sessions, would you say yes?
Well, anybody who gets a request should always accept, absent the most extreme circumstances like physical health. But obviously, when the president asks for assistance, you give it to him. And no one should ever turn down the president unless it's absolutely physically essential that he or she do so.
So let me put the question to you again, because our communications broke up a little bit, and I want to make sure that I want to make sure I get the answer correctly. So if asked, if asked to be the next attorney general, you would accept the position?
Oh, of course. Nobody could turn it down. It's the greatest job in the world.
And what would you then do?
Well, I think any new attorney general is going to have to establish a line of command to set up the series of cases that have to be investigated. All the former intelligence officials who were involved in setting up a fake case against the president of the United States would have to be notified that their presence before a federal grand jury was going to be required. And that is, you'd have to do that. Unless you do that, then your presence is useless. Someone has to have an accounting through a grand jury process of the exoneration of Hillary Clinton, which was done illegally, and the attempt to frame Donald Trump, which remains, in my opinion, an ongoing criminal plot. And I just don't see how anybody cannot do that if they're made attorney general. You simply must investigate both aspects of this incredible, incredible scheme.
Here's the
other thing. One of the reasons that's an absolute imperative is this guy, John Huber, that Rosenstein and Sessions appointed to do an investigation into all these things is actually, I think, a head fake. I think that investigation is a joke. I think it's a Potemkin village. One of the things that the attorney general outlined was that he was going to investigate Uranium One, which was the illicit sale of 20% of the American enriched uranium to the Russians. Now, the key central figure in that case is Doug Campbell, who is a client of our firm, a pro bono client of our firm. He has never been interviewed by Huber in the entire time that Huber has since his appointment.
Right.
That's not an investigation.
No.
That's a joke.
Right. And just to our listeners, you know, we're getting some interference. That's likely the NSA and the FBI listening into the conversation. But seriously, I was astonished to learn from the congressmen who were in the hearing this week. It was actually a deposition behind closed doors of Bruce Orr, the number four official at the Department of Justice, who was the intermediary, the contact, who was providing information to the FBI from Christopher Steele, who gave the phony dossier to the FBI and now says, well, I told the FBI it wasn't credible. Great. So why are you giving it to them for their use? Why did you not say something? But at any rate, he has not been interviewed by John Huber, which tells me immediately the appointment of John Huber, who is a U.S. attorney in Utah, of all places, where all of the witnesses are in Washington and the documents are in Washington. It tells me that Huber is nothing more than window dressing. This is, as you say, it's just a head fake. It really isn't a legitimate investigation of Comey and his Confederates.
I think all the evidence points to that conclusion. And just think about it. There is all the evidence is on the record that there were illegal leaks of highly classified NSA information to individuals who then led to the unmasking of individuals illegally and then the leaking of their names to the press. Those are all federal crimes, none of which, as far as we can tell from any publicly available evidence, is being investigated. Why isn't Samantha Powers being investigated for making more than 200 requests for unmasking, an unprecedented number of requests for a UN ambassador? What was her need to have that done? And she claims, according to her congressional testimony, that, quote, someone used her name to get those unmaskings. Well, if that's the case, who was it? And who's investigating it? And the answer is, if it's Huber, I have absolutely no faith whatsoever in this process. This is really, and this is why Jeff Sessions should resign. Your suggestion is the correct one. And by the way, if he doesn't resign after the election, I expect the president to ask for his resignation.
So it invites the question then, who will replace Jeff Sessions? You know, Sessions is finished. He just doesn't know it yet, which is consistent with his clueless behavior. But you also have to get rid of Rod Rosenstein at the same time, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Rosenstein is the Rasputin of this couple. Sessions is the sort of goofy wizard who can't, you know, he doesn't conduct magic anymore. Jeff is just so out of it and irrelevant to the conduct of the public's business. I mean, this Rotary Club performance of going and giving all these speeches about immigration and everything, those are, of course, very important subjects. But that misses the point. The point is, in the most important battle for this president, he is MIA. And it's got to be, Rosenstein has to go because, first of all, how he could possibly remain in charge of this case with the conflicts of interest that he has is just, it's just remarkable. It's just absolutely incredible. Plus, he's directly involved in Uranium One as another conflict. So is he supervising Huber? The conflicts for Rosenstein are endless. And if you believe Mueller that the firing of Comey was an obstruction of justice, then Rosenstein is the one who wrote the memo suggesting that he be fired.
Right.
So he's either a witness or a co-conspirator.
As I write in the book, it is dead set against federal regulations to be prosecutor and witness all rolled into one. As the federal judge T.S. Ellis said, has Rosenstein recused himself yet? And the you know, the judge was being facetious but serious. You know, and I have talked to so many different lawyers and law professors about Rosenstein, and they're all completely mystified and confounded that this guy who has a mandatory recusal has not done so. So you heard it here first. Joe DiGenova will take the position as attorney general, if asked, upon the resignation or firing of Jeff Sessions, and will convene a grand jury to investigate the investigators, the law enforcers who became the lawbreakers. Joe, many, many thanks. All of this is in my book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump, available in bookstores and online, Amazon.com. I'm Greg Jarrett. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Greg Jarrett. Speaking of Twitter, my handle is at Greg Jarrett, but you have to spell Greg correctly. You see, it's GREGGJARRETT. And I hope you go because you'll see links to not only the column I wrote a couple of days ago, which directly deals with the Russia hoax, but you'll see a link for my number one New York Times bestselling book called The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. One of the chapters in the book, I go through the FBI guidelines and the rules and regulations promulgated by the Department of Justice. This is essentially the law. And the FBI violated their own laws and regulations. They had no legal basis to launch its investigation of Donald Trump and his campaign. There was no probable cause. That's required. There was no credible evidence of crimes committed. There was never plausible intelligence to justify a counterintelligence probe. Facts were invented or exaggerated. This was a hoax manufactured by high-ranking officials within the FBI and the Department of Justice. They did this for political reasons because they wanted Hillary Clinton, whom they'd improperly and illegally cleared of her crimes. They wanted her to be president, and they wanted to stop Donald Trump from being president. And that word stop comes into play in the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page text messages that provide a powerful narrative of how their severe bias against Trump motivated them and others to clear Hillary Clinton and target Donald Trump in an attempt to stop him from becoming president. Strzok said, well, I don't really remember writing that text that I'm going to stop Trump from becoming president. But then he went on to say, but it didn't mean what it said. Guess what? Lisa Page, in her testimony, said those texts meant exactly what they stated. But when their plot, their illicit scheme, failed, these same people continued to pursue this contrived investigation in an attempt to undo the election results and remove Trump as president. And when Comey got fired, then he went into overdrive. He stole government documents, leaked them to the media for the sole purpose of triggering a special counsel who just happened to be his longtime friend, partner, and ally, Robert Mueller. And here we are. Among all of the criminal charges that have been filed, how many of them deal with Trump-Russia collusion? Let me help you with the answer. Zero. Nada. Nothing. I want to go to your phone calls. Standing by is Brenda in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Brenda.
Yes.
You're on the air, Brenda. Go ahead.
Oh, excellent. First of all, it's an honor to speak with you. And I just wanted to say, after I've been waiting a very long time, that I think... I have a theory and a suspicion that there was a mole inserted into all of Trump's campaign and afterwards, after he became president, and that when the thing that they talk about called a firewall or an insurance policy, I hope the insurance policy will hold, or the firewall, I believe that that person, even though you don't think maybe that highly of him,
right,
was Jeff Sessions. And I've never heard anyone say that. I believe, and it dawned on me a long time ago when I first heard them say insurance policy, that was a quote from Strzok, I believe.
Yes, it was one of his text messages.
Right. He said insurance policy, and nobody's keyed onto that, or it's always what
right.
You mean by that.
Well,
I think
the insurance policy, I conclude in the book, The Russia Hoax, was this dilating and fraudulent investigation of Donald Trump. That was their insurance policy, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page. And Andrew McCabe was in on it because, of course, his name is mentioned in that, you know, text message, the insurance policy you talked about in Andy's office. So, you know, that was their insurance policy. It was part of the frame job of Donald Trump. But the firewall is contained within the 63 pages of Bruce Orr's notes, text messages, and emails that he exchanged with Christopher Steele, the British spy, the author of the phony dossier that was used to not only wiretap, but to launch the Trump-Russia investigation. And the firewall he's talking about, I believe, is that he was expecting the FBI and the Department of Justice to provide protection so he wouldn't be exposed for his illegal actions in conjuring out of thin air this 17-memo dossier, which is based on triple and quadruple hearsay from anonymous sources that were just made up. I mean, in the book, I lay out the British court documents in a defamation case in which, under oath, Christopher Steele admits that his dossier is nothing more than, quote-unquote, raw intelligence. In other words, it's not worth the paper it's written on. It was a fairy tale. He just made it up because he told Bruce Orr that he was desperate to stop Donald Trump. Why is a guy in Great Britain so concerned about who gets elected president in the United States? It's amazing to me. Well, the answer is probably because he was on the payroll of Hillary Clinton. And he wanted to continue getting paid, and he wanted to make sure that Hillary Clinton got her money's worth. So he phonied up a document. He just made it up, and he passed it along to the FBI, and he passed it along to Bruce Orr, and they were off to the races. They knew that it was all made up, but they didn't care. They were looking for an excuse, a pretext to go after Trump, and the dossier provided it, and their firewall was, steel expected Orr and the FBI and the Department of Justice to protect him and hide him and conceal the fact that he had committed crimes. Let's go to our next caller, David, in Southern California, where I grew up. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So what do you think?
Well, I think this whole thing is a hoax. Let me just lay it out for you, and then I'll go into the background and listen to your response. We know Sessions is useless. We know that Rosenstein is dirty. Even Christopher Wray has not stepped up to the plate to give Congress what they've asked for. We know that there is significant evidence that proves this whole thing is made up. We found out that Congress is useless when it comes to the FBI and the DOJ, giving them what they're legally entitled to. So the question is, why are we continuing any of this when we have now discovered that we truly do live in a banana republic?
Yeah, well, this was a question Lou Dobbs put to me last night on his program. How do we fix this thing? And the only answer is that we have to continue to dig and expose the corruption and get rid of Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein. You have to have people in command of the Department of Justice who care about the rule of law. And I write about this in my book, The Russia Hoax. I said I didn't write this to be defending Donald Trump. I wrote this because I care deeply as a trial lawyer about the rule of law. And as an American, I care about efforts to subvert democracy and trifle with our elections. And there were people at the Department of Justice and the FBI who tried to interfere and dictate the outcome of this election far more than any Russians did in trying to meddle with disinformation. And so the real villains in all of this are the FBI and the Department of Justice. And I do say that, the rank and file at the FBI, these are fine, honest, and honorable people who work very hard, and they are angry and aggrieved at what James Comey did. How do I know? Because I've talked to what seems like, hundreds of them. And I've talked to former top officials who were quoted in the book, and they tell me all the time, and I still talk to them, that the rank and file are angry at what James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page did. They ruined the reputation, the integrity, the credibility of the FBI, and it will take years for the Federal Bureau of Investigation to recover from that, and that is a shame. That is the arrogance of power. You read James Comey's vainglorious book that reads like a Harlequin romance, except the protagonist is in love with himself. And James Comey, the great perverse irony, is that Comey is responsible more than anybody else for the biggest hoax in modern American history. And he has the audacity, the temerity, to pen this book that's nauseous to read, to make a buck off of his wrongdoing, for which he was fired, by the way, for usurping the power of the attorney general and breaking all kinds of rules and regulations at the Department of Justice. But James Comey only cares about himself, always has. utterly arrogant, egomaniacal, self-absorbed. That is the truth about James Comey. Let's go to our next caller. Jimmy joins us from New York. Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
Enjoying your show. You're doing a great job, you and Hannity.
Thank you.
Listen, being that the Justice and FBI are illegally holding back subpoena documents, can we extend the statute of limitations so the conspirators can't run out the clock? Or can we stop the clock from when the subpoenas were issued until they are delivered?
Well, it's a very good question, and every different statute has a different statute of limitations. So, for example, in the Hillary Clinton email case, not all of the statute of limitations have run, but she's certainly hoping that they do, that this thing continues to drag on thanks to Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein and their inaction in reopening the case. As far as the conduct of people at the FBI and the Department of Justice who, it appears to me, and I lay out the different felony statutes in the book, the Russia hoax, obstruction of justice, abuse of power, perjury, the list goes on and on. All of those tend to have different statute of limitations. Most of them have not run. So whether or not the statute can be told, that's a really complicated legal question. Toll means extended. It just depends on the circumstances. Jimmy, thanks for your phone call. Let's go to Kathy out in California. Where are you in California, Kathy?
Southern California. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. And I'm reading your book.
Thank you.
I'm about halfway through, and it's really well written, real informative. Thank you.
Thank you.
And based on the evidence that you know to date, who do you think is the mastermind who coordinated this hoax? Because you're looking at different agencies. You're looking at the DOJ, you're looking at the FBI, you're looking at news media. Who do you think ultimately is the shot caller for all of these agencies? Who's coordinating?
Well, it's an excellent question, and I wish I had a solid answer. I've always felt that these are people who were all on the same page, not that they sat down and said, you know, we're going to nominate James Comey as the head of this conspiracy. I think they were just all of the same mind. They all hated Trump because he vowed to drain the swamp. They were the swamp. They didn't want to be drained. They didn't want to be driven from office. They wanted to maintain their positions of power. So they were all sort of acting in concert, and there may not have been one singular mastermind. They were all mini masterminds. But it's a great question, Kathy from California. More of your calls on the other side. Our number is 1-800-941-7326. I hope you'll pick up my book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump, available in bookstores or online. Number one, New York Times bestseller for 3 weeks in a row. I'm Greg Jarrett. This is The Sean Hannity Show. Welcome back to The Sean Hannity Show in the remaining moments. I hope you'll pick up my book, the number one New York Times bestseller, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. I lay out the facts, the evidence, and the law. You can reach your own conclusion. It's backed up by more than 700 footnotes. These are facts, ladies and gentlemen, the law. I lay out the statutes, the Supreme Court decisions interpreting the law. I lay it all out, and I hope you'll buy the book, The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. This is The Sean Hannity Show.